You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to another edition of The Winning Drive. You want to call it the championship drive, baby.
I know. I'm messed up. My man called me out on it last week. I mean, Monday, too.
No, Coach, it is. It should be. The winning drive. Hey, we already got it, baby. It's a championship drive. We in the championship mindset. So that's the unofficial name of the show. Coach already coined it.
Yeah,
that's,
That's what we're doing. You thought I was just being really wise.
I did.
I just totally screwed it up, honestly.
I thought you were being a coach. And a coach was like, no. We got to have We got to have a check.
I wish I was smarter with that, but I just screwed it up.
Hey, well, you know what? Sometimes happy accidents, baby. Happy accidents. I like it. Championship drive, winning drive. Hey, whatever you refer to it as what you want. But we're having a good time with the show. I haven't introduced everybody. We got my man CJ Vogel. He's one of the hardest working human beings I know in this industry, working hard for y'all. So we appreciate CJ Vogel, man. He is a valuable member of the On Texas Football family. There's no doubt about it. I was a fan before CJ became a member of the On Texas Football family, and we became teammates. But now I'm an even bigger fan because I know how the man works, ladies and gentlemen, and he works hard. Also a man who works very hard. He's also a former high school football coach at Capel, Brownwood, Belton, Burnett, Rotan, also with those Yellow Hammers. He was a college football player at Abilene Christian, also coached there in two different stints, was also on the staff at the University of Texas with multiple head coaches there for five different seasons. And now you can catch his work at ShipleyRanches.com. Hey, I'm still sporting that Shipley Ranches hat, too.
I see you are.
I wore this morning, Coach. I wore this morning for the show, my whole morning show. I was sporting. It would just match my ensemble perfectly. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Coach Bob Shipley. What's going on, Coach?
How y'all doing? When you see me do this, I'm either sipping a drink or spitting tobacco, whatever you think.
Hey, I've had some friends get that mixed up too, that drinking cup and that tobacco spitting cup. And that ain't no good for nobody, man. That's bad business.
Little Jordan Shipley was 5 years old and made that mistake too, man. To this day, he can't stand tobacco. So mission accomplished.
There you go. Once again, great parenting too.
Hey, I'm a great dad.
Hey, CJ, what's going on, brother? How you doing?
Yeah, I've been glued to the couch this morning, man. I mean, all this March Madness, this basketball going on. It's one of the best days of the year for me. I know, Coach, I heard you were,
feeling out. I was on the couch too.
Morning hours, huh?
I was on the couch too, but I was sleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah, March Madness. Yeah, my idea of March Madness is driving through Central Texas looking at blue bonnets.
Say, it ain't everybody's thing. I totally.
I'm sorry.
That. Hey, I mean, that's all right. But you
played a lot of things. But I ain't a basketball man.
Hey, the Longhorns are playing tonight. That's all Coach needs to know. The Longhorns are playing Colorado State tonight. We'll be off. We'll be done with.
We're going to get through it before the game.
Before the game. Matter of fact, we're gonna expedite this thing a little bit. We'll cut it off kind of a tad early just to make sure you got plenty of time to get ready for the game. Texas men's basketball playing Colorado State tonight. Tomorrow, I believe the women are playing Drexel. tomorrow. That's gonna be an Old Testament style butt whipping though. We really gotta break that down. The ladies are gonna put it on Drexel. Yeah, the ladies are on one seed, so they're in a different category than the men who are a seven seed. But we'll get into it. We'll break it out just a little bit. We'll get into it just a tad. We got our own spin that the winning drive is going to put on it. But the big news, Texas Pro Day. I mean, C.J. Vogel, one of the hardest working men in this industry. He was in attendance, had a chance to see everything up close and personal, man. I was following all your tweets. I was following all the coverage. It was great stuff there. Give me your thoughts just initially about Texas Pro Day. Matt Miller reported 96 scouts and our coaches and our executives in attendance at the Texas Pro Day. It's been a long time since they had them kind of numbers at a Texas Pro Day.
Yeah, we'll start there because the way that they have it set up, right as you walk into the bubble, there's a table to the right for media where you go in and you check in, you get your credentials, and so you sit behind a rope there that's, you know, right in the end zone of the bubble, right as you walk in. And from where you are as a media member to the door to the field where everybody is taking place or stretching or getting ready to do their drills on the field, that's where all the scouts and coaches and execs have to walk through. And so when that first bus unloaded and you saw that first guy with the NFL badge on his chest walked by, it felt like it took about 5 or 10 minutes before every single last NFL personnel member made it onto the field. And by the end of that time, you look over and, you know, it wasn't just 3 or 4 guys running and stretching and doing their pre-workout, you know, routine. It was almost an entire parade. You know, there was a whole bunch of different colors on the field. Teams were represented. I made the mistake of wasting my time with – I had my checklist on my phone. I was like, all right, as a new guy walks in with a new roster or a new team, I'm going to cross them off. Like, I got to see which coaches are here.
Yeah.
There was 96. You know, there was over 90 coaches. There's a coach from every single team at this pro day yesterday, which is not something you could say in recent years. And so – I mean, yesterday we mentioned it on the Longhorn live stream last night. It was almost a celebration of where Texas is currently under Steve Sarkisian. You know, you talked about these guys departing for the NFL and embarking on their career journey, which is, you know, going to be one of their biggest accomplishments, a goal, that's coming true whenever they step foot in the NFL. And it was really cool to see not only the NFL personnel there to you know, watch, scout, evaluate the former Texas Longhorn players in attendance to support, but also, you know, the current teammates, your past teammates that are on the team right now that said, you know what, I don't need to be studying right now. I need to be out here watching how this pro day works. I need to support my former brothers, and I need to be out here, you know, getting an idea of what it's like to become a future NFL prospect. So I thought it was really cool all around, and plus the performance on the field was spectacular as well.
I'll tell you, it's the first pro day in a long time, in my opinion, that I think that Gil Brandt can't be there. He passed away, of course. But yeah. Gil Brandt, long time, innovative. He innovated scouting. I mean, he's the first one to really go in depth into it, and I always enjoyed my visits with him there. He's been at every pro day that I've ever been a part of. Gil Brandt was there.
Are you talking about someone who revolutionized talent evaluation? I mean, he's basically one of the godfathers or the founding fathers of modern talent evaluation in the NFL. And I still remember, honestly, Coach, I remember the time that I walked into a pro day and Gil Brandt knew who I was. And I got butterflies.
That's big time.
Oh man! And he was like, I was like, excuse me. I was like, excuse me, Mr. Brandt. He was like, Rod Babers. And I was like, whoa. You know what I mean? Whoa. Like, again, still to this day, I just, my heart just kind of fluttered right then thinking about it because he's considered, you know, such an iconic figure. So I'm with you on that. RIP to a legend. No doubt about it. He was at all the Texas Pro Days. He did. He represented all the time. He was there all the time. Yeah. No doubt.
He really did. They hadn't drafted near as many as we'd like to have drafted since he retired, but he loved Longhorns. He sure did.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And he would have loved this group of Longhorns, this class coming out. I mean, it was a spectacular class. I love that, you know, you had – now, it's Jim Nagy, the Senior Bowl executive. He's the one that had the tweet that you referred to on the live stream, CJ, where he actually documented – he tweeted out, documented how many – position coaches were in attendance at the Texas Pro Day. He said there were 11 wide receiver coaches at the Texas Pro Day. Just let you, I mean, you're talking about a third of the NFL that decided now we're going to send our wide receiver coach there to see the Texas wide receivers, Xavier Worthy and A.D. Mitchell. That was the Giants, the Patriots, the Vikings, the Ravens, the Colts, Steelers, Jets, Texans, Chargers, Bears, and the Eagles all sent theirs. And the second position group that had the most NFL representation, of course, the defensive line, Saints, Bears, Raiders, Jets, Colts, Vikings, Saints. So seven defensive line coaches from the NFL came to the Texas Pro Day. I honestly, I can't remember how a time where they had that many position coaches just at any particular position. I'm sure it did happen back in the mid 2000s to late 2000s. But it's been a long time since I've been covering, because I've been covering since 2008. So it's been probably since I started covering Texas football at the beginning of that, coach.
Hey, Rod, one of the funnier moments of the afternoon was actually for the defensive line. You know, and when you mentioned all those defensive line coaches that were in attendance, and whenever these big boys start running a little bit, you know, it gets kind of tough for these guys to slow down at that size. And so they were running the circle, you know, and so you start on one side of the circle, you run around it, you drop a bag, you make a quick turnaround, you go back the other side of the circle, and then you finish through the drill through the line.
Yep.
Well, when these coaches are evaluating, they like getting close. They like, you know, getting a very close look on what a lot of these prospects look like. And I think one scout got a little too close, because when Byron Murphy finished through the line, I tell you what, the look in his eyes whenever he saw 300 pounds coming right at him at that speed, I assure you, he was not standing there when T'Vondre Sweat took the next rep at 367. It was full steam ahead, and I think his face went a little white when he saw what was coming down the tracks. Yeah, it was scary, but no. But to your point, it was not only interesting how intently these position coaches were watching a number of these players, but also the head coaches. You know, there were three head coaches there yesterday: Shane Steichen of the Indianapolis Colts, Mike McDaniels of the Miami Dolphins, and of course Zach Taylor of the Cincinnati Bengals. And right now, you're probably looking around of that group thinking, yeah, I mean, pretty good teams across the board. The Indianapolis Colts, new young, fresh quarterback, obviously Sam Ehlinger in the mix as well. The other two in the AFC, you anticipate them being in the playoff mix for a while. And I wonder why they're there. You know, you look at where the Bengals pick. They just lost. What's the future like with T. Higgins? Could they go out and add A.D. Mitchell at 18? The Miami Dolphins love speed. Could they make a move up for Xavier Worthy or potentially draft someone like Jatavion Sanders later on in the draft? And, of course, the Colts with their new quarterback getting some new weapons. You know, that's kind of the key for these young guys. But when Quinn Ewers came up to throw the ball later in that day, I tell you what, how close Mike McDaniel was to Quinn Ewers, I tell you what, the college coaches hate it. And Coach Shipley, you can talk about it a little bit as well. If you stand too close behind that quarterback when he's dropping back in practice, oh, you're going to hear from Coach Milwee, Coach Sarkisian, and Coach Flood, get back away from the quarterback. Don't touch the quarterback and don't stand behind him when he's dropping back in his drop. But I tell you what, Mike McDaniel was as close as you could get without Sarkisian looking over and being like, hey, you know, back up a bit. Looking over his shoulder, watching every throw, and for good reason. I mean, he was on the money yesterday, and I thought it was one of the highlights of the day. When you talk about it holistically, Quinn Ewers was tremendous.
Yeah, no doubt. I heard he only had one bad throw, pretty much, an overthrow on the out route. But other than that, everything looked crisp from Quinn Ewers. Like a couple of questions before we get to some of the questions from the chat and throw them out there, super chats questions. We'll get to them here in just a second. But this entire process, we know the Longhorns had a great combine. It was a fabulous combine. You could argue they won it overall with performances from Byron Murphy and Xavier Worthy setting the 40-yard dash record as well. A.D. Mitchell was phenomenal in his workouts. What player for Texas, what draftable prospect from Texas had the most really had their draft stock improve the most in this off-season period here, the combine season, if you will, between combine and pro day? Who do you think's draft stock improved the most?
It was undoubtedly Ryan Watts. You know, this was the guy coming off of that Washington game. You didn't know what he was going to do, whether it be stay at Texas, move to safety, enter the transfer portal, or even, you know, as he did, declare for the NFL draft. So for him to be kind of that uncertain for his own future, to go out, run a 4.53, come in above 6.3, broad jump 11.1 yesterday, and still clear 40 inches on the vertical. The athleticism alone with that length and size is going to get him drafted. And by each account, you know, that he's been able to put on the field in front of these scouts, whether it be the East-West Shrine Bowl where he was up in Frisco earlier this offseason, he impressed. Started climbing up into that draft a little bit. Goes to the combine, puts down great measurables. Okay, now he's maybe for sure in the draft, maybe even a six-round pick. Then he goes out yesterday and he jumps 11-1. He does great in the individual position drills. Now you're sitting there thinking, could this guy be a fourth or even fifth or fourth round pick? Like, how high is Ryan Watts going to go? He's really, really climbed. It's been really impressive because, again, coming off of that Washington game where it felt like he was picked on, you know, pretty harshly by Texas fans. I mean, I didn't necessarily think he was going to be a for sure lock for the NFL draft. But as we talked about, Rod, with the NIL part of the draft, kind of keeping a lot of those fringe guys in school.
Oh, yeah.
It certainly helps his case with this strong testing to be like, all right, now he's got a pretty good shot to make some good money in the draft.
Totally agree. Yeah. Coach, what do you think?
Well, I agree. I think he did a good job in helping himself because he was – there's a huge question. But, again, I think he's one of those versatile players, you know, that can play a couple of positions back there, and I think he's intriguing. You know, with his the length that he has at 6'3", is he's intriguing, and you know the broad jump is that's a pretty interesting 11-1. That's
it's explosive.
Yeah, that shows some explosion. You know, at 6'3", to be able to jump at that. I think Xavier was. What, 10, almost 11 feet, I think, maybe, on his. So I agree. I think Ryan Watts really helped himself.
Yeah, what was impressive yesterday for Watts is 10.5 at the NFL Combine is what he did jump on the broad jump. Not bad, and when you match that with the 40-inch vertical, you're looking at it like, yeah, we know that you have that explosiveness. When you clear 11 inches, I mean – that or 11 feet, sorry, excuse me.
Yeah.
Then that's really saying, yeah, his lower body can really go. It was funny. He jumped, I think, a 10.8 in his first jump, and he jumps again, and you hear A.D. Mitchell off to the side go, oh, yeah, that's 10.10, like for sure.
Yeah.
And you hear the scout that's measuring go, 11.1. And that whole sideline of Texas players that were participating yesterday just explodes a little bit. It was really cool to see. I mean, we've talked about how that culture's changed. And as these guys depart to the NFL, they're no longer going to be on that same group, but they've been a part of that same brotherhood, and that support's still going to be there down the road. So it was really cool to see them one last time sit back and say, all right, you know, we're going to be there for each other and support each other once again.
Yeah, and that, hey,
I want to say one thing, Rod.
Go ahead.
CJ, what about the bench press?
Yeah.
What about Keelan Robinson?
Hey, yeah. That's a good one, Coach.
Where did that come from?
That's a good one. It is.
Hey, Coach Shipley, tell me what you can use with a guy that runs a 4.42 and can bench 20 pounds, especially when it comes to his return ability, too. Can you find a spot for a guy like that on your field?
There's no doubt. No doubt. I don't know that he helped himself as much as Ryan did, but, I mean, that's an eye-opener. You look at, obviously – you know, we don't like to talk about the negatives, but it is reality. You know, JT Sanders didn't have a great bench press. I mean, and for Keelan to come in and bench over twice as much, it's a crazy stat. And I think maybe people are going, hey, this guy's got some athleticism. Maybe we need to take a little closer look at him and his versatility and everything he can do.
Yep. I thought that was a good point on Jatavion. And, Rod, I wanted to get your thoughts a little bit. because we've seen Jatavion Sanders be a menace on the field. We know what he can do. You know, we come in expecting him to be that number two tight end, probably by a good margin. And then, I think it's safe to say yesterday wasn't the numbers that we were expecting, and I'm sure NFL scouts were probably thinking the same thing. How concerning is that for you, for a guy to broad jump 9.896, I want to say? He didn't have a great vertical and only 8 reps on the bench. I mean, was there something you think behind the scenes that was kind of holding them back, or is that something that you're just going to say, all right, he did it at the combine, we'll take those numbers, we'll take the tape on the field as well, and we'll just forget that the pro day ever happened?
If you're a scout and you like JT Sanders, and then you've obviously watched the testing and seen the measurables and you're disappointed, you got to go back to the film and you got to do some further investigation on him and his football character and his work ethic and why that would be the case. That's because I'm with you, dude. I think it was 8 reps or something like that on the bench. As a tight end, considering upper body strength is going to be something that you have to utilize when you're blocking defensive ends, outside linebackers, that will be a concern. I will say that he is great when it comes to being able to win one-on-one battles in coverage. Mm-hmm. His catch radius is outstanding. His contested catch ability is outstanding. He has a unique ability to position himself against defenders to almost like a basketball player, to be able to basically box guys out when he's catching footballs as well. So I think he's a 5-star football player, not a 5-star athlete. And there is a difference.
Right? Hey, Rob, this is a guy that doesn't test well in school, but still finds a way to get, you know, the 6-figure high paying job right out of college somehow. You know, you're like, that
exactly.
He never went to class. He didn't tutor. He didn't do anything. And you know, he's still up there, Goldman Sachs on,
an NFL player when you see an NFL player, right? I said the same thing about Lil Jordan Humphrey. I was like, well, he's an NFL player. And he was like, well, man, he ran like a 4.7. I was like, yeah, but man, the guy can play. I mean, he just can play, and he's still making rosters. How long has Lil Jordan Humphrey been in the league now? Making rosters, and he ran a 4.7. They still didn't really know what to do. It's like, well, he's too slow to play on the outside, and he's not big enough to be an actual tight end. I guess we can flex him. We can move him around, and Sean Payton, I think, loves him more than anybody. Yeah, because he is a guy that's got that versatility. So, I mean, if you can play, you can play. I was thinking about Colin Johnson because he ran a slow 4, and I was like, man, Colin Johnson can play. That guy can win one-on-ones. He's amazing. When in 50-50 balls, he turns into 70-30 balls. So I think JT Sanders like that. So he definitely didn't improve his draft stock. I think if you really like JT Sanders, which I'm sure a lot of scouts do, you go back to the film and then you go do more kind of investigative research and due diligence on him as a player. Then you'll find out he's a great leader. And you'll find out that he works his butt off. And maybe there's a reason that he had an injury or something that he stopped lifting for a while. Like, I don't know. I have no idea exactly why he would have such a subpar bench press, because it was for an athlete like him. But he's not, like I said, he's not a 5-star athlete. He's a 5-star football player. Yep. And like I said, there are some guys who are both, and there are some guys who are one or the other.
Well, my thing with him is I'm afraid that there are some teams that may pass on him, you know, thinking about the way the tight ends have to – you know, they've got to be able to block, you know. Yeah. And as we've talked about before, I think probably in our first show on Monday, the scouts are, you know, some of them, especially the inexperienced scouts, the scouts that haven't really developed a name for themselves, they're looking for a reason not to draft a guy. And so there are going to be some teams, they're going to mark them off their list because – of the bench press. But the teams that are able to get past all that, and like you said, Rod, look at, he's not a 5-star athlete, but he is a 5-star player. He has great body control. He can catch the ball in traffic as good as any tight end we've had since 2007 or 8, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's the real deal. Somebody's probably going to wind up getting a steal on him because some teams are going to back off and see that and go, man, I got a guy up here in Wisconsin or whatever that can do 20 reps, you know, and we need that kind of strength to be able to play in our division.
Yep.
And so I think somebody's going to wind up getting a steal on him because some teams are, unfortunately, they're going to mark him off their list, you know, for until a later round.
Yeah, I think him and Sweat are like that. I think Sweat came in heavier. Sweat came in at 367. He's at 366 at the combine, but he looked. Exactly. But he looks great moving around. He really does. He carries it really well. And it's almost amazing to watch him move at, you know, kind of the rate that he does and move with the agility that he does at that size. But there are some teams, kind of like you just said about JT Sanders, coach, are like, nah, he ain't got the upper body strength to be a great blocker yet. And we ain't got the time. We're not investing in him. So, you know, he can get his upper body strength together and then teach him how to be a great blocker. Some teams may be willing to do that. Some teams won't. Same thing with Devondre Sweat. Some teams will go, nah, that'd be too much of an outlier at that size in our system. Not going to work. And then some teams will go, man, he's actually perfect for our system. He's the perfect outlier for us in our system. So it's all about preference with these coaches and what systems they're running, that kind of stuff. Let me ask you this, because I know I want to talk about some. Get to some of these questions and talk about the Texas spring football season a little bit, with Texas having their second spring practice. I want to get to the question of how many players do you think will be overall drafted now? You just said, CJ, and I think you made a great point about, you know, now Ryan Watts is going to be a draftable prospect. It looks like he could be drafted in the late rounds. How many got Christian Jones now is a guy that went from being a late round pick to now some people are saying he could be a mid round pick. How many guys overall? What's your over under here on how many Texas players get drafted in the draft?
I think now you can look at 8 for sure. And I think 9's a real possibility now.
8 for sure.
8 for sure. I think Ryan Watts is in, Christian Jones is in. Those are for sure. Those are maybe the two question marks, maybe the two guys that you didn't know for sure coming out of the season, following what they've done from now to the combine, to the Senior Bowl, to the Pro Day, you can lock them in for sure. And what's interesting now is how high do teams start valuing Keelan Robinson? Because, coach, like you said, 20 reps at 225, that's not something to shrug at. When you compare that or combine that with a 4.4 240, I mean, now you're really moving and you got some power to it to you. Not only are you going to be able to be a guy that can tote the rock, but you can also be a guy that brings down ball carriers, which is exactly what he did on punts and did a very, very fine job of that this past season. So he's an interesting one to me. The only ones that I'm for sure looking at that participated yesterday that I don't think will be drafted is, I don't think there's enough value in punters to hear Ryan Sanborn's name. Jet Bush, for all that he gave Texas, I just think he's lacking a little athleticism and production on the field to get drafted. And then, unfortunately, I don't think right now you're going to hear Jordan Whittington's name. And I think it's very unfortunate because, again, you talk to anybody in the Texas circle, you talk to all three of us, and we'll tell you the exact same thing. And he even mentioned it in his pro day press conference yesterday. I mean, he was sitting there, he's like, the biggest thing that stood out to me in this draft process was every NFL scout that has talked to a Texas football player about me, or they asked them the same question. Who is one person from your Texas team in 2023 that you would bring with you to the NFL to be on your team? And Jordan said every one of his teammates answered Jordan Whittington. And again, I think that's the sentiment that we would all echo. We would all have those same stories about Jordan Whittington, the heart, the effort, the hustle, how much this game means to him. But unfortunately, he just hasn't been healthy to participate in the Senior Bowl, the Pro Day, or the Combine. Texas will have another opportunity for him to get those testing numbers available to scouts on April 14th with the little second mini Pro Day in Austin. Just one last opportunity 2 weeks before the NFL draft. But for Whittington right now, it's so unfortunate, but I don't think he's going to be hearing his name called in the draft this upcoming month or next month.
I
agree with that too, unfortunately. For every guy you've got, you know, imagine every team in Division I football or even in college football that has somebody like Ryan Watts, you know, that somebody like Keelan Robinson who is showing some stuff late and moving up. Unfortunately, with Jay Witt, you know, being injured, he's going to have some people pass him up because they're impressing the scouts in their pro days. And there's, you know, you just think about all the pro days across the country and the people that's draft stock is increasing. And again, you've got to remember the majority of these scouts, they do not want to be embarrassed. They want to try to find a reason not to draft you. And so, unfortunately, I'm glad you said that, CJ, because I was thinking the same thing after Pro Day. I'm just afraid that, you know, that there's going to be some people that are going to pass Jaywitt up. But make no mistake, he will have a long NFL career, in my opinion. Hmm. He will be a guy that may have to go as a free agent. But the things that he brings to the table in terms of locker room and leadership and work ethic and all those things, he's going to be impressive in the interviews and all those things that he's doing. But I'm just afraid there's some people that are passing him up in their pro days.
Yeah, it's never been a question whether Jaywitt can play and whether Jaywitt has a Sunday skill set. He does. But Jaywitt can't stay healthy. And durability is the number one ability in the NFL. Can't make the club in the tub. And my concern is that even if Jaywitt does impress at the NFL level, can he stay healthy enough? Is he durable enough to stay healthy an entire season to contribute? And if he is healthy, yeah, everybody's going to see all the assets he brings to a team. But if he's not healthy, you don't get that. So I've always said I think Jaywitt's got a shot, but there's no way he's going to get drafted because he hasn't had a chance to showcase enough. And he hasn't had a chance to test at all, really. And we don't know how the testing is going to go at the next pro day. And I'm sure 96 NFL, you know, scouts, execs, coaches won't be there. And I think for Jaywitt, honestly, at this point, he's got to try to just be a priority free agent.
Which isn't the end of the world, by the way. You get to pick where you go. You know, this is one of those things where you can walk into a franchise that has done things the right way for a long period of time. Oh, and has a decent quarterback to get you the rock. And, you know, you talk about for quarterbacks, the big thing coming out of college is finding the right system, finding the right offensive mind to put you in situations to succeed while also having an offensive line in front of you. And that's a big part of it. For wide receivers, it's different because you got to have somebody throw you the rock. And right now we're looking at it a little differently for guys like Xavier Worthy and A.D. Mitchell. If they don't go in the first round, now you get into that second round where, you know, it's no longer playoff teams that you're dealing with in that back half of the first round. You might end up in Carolina or New England or, you know, for previously before the Russell Wilson signing, Pittsburgh, where it looked like a lot of these teams are like not where you want to end up as a wide receiver. So for Jordan Whittington, an undrafted free agent route wouldn't be the worst part because, hey, you could end up in Houston and you could have CJ Stroud thrown to you with a very, you know, a bright future ahead of you with that franchise.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. I totally agree with you. No, you're right. The wide receiver draft also hurts Jaywitt this year, too. It's one of the deepest wide receiver drafts we've seen in years. It is the deepest position in football, period, but it's a really deep wide receiver draft. All right, how about this? There's a great question here from Rick. Rick says, is it a coincidence that Mike McDaniel was at the Texas Pro Day, the Dolphins run an RPO offense, and Tua's contract ends in 2024. CJ, you talked about how close Mike McDaniel was to the workout of Quinn Ewers. And, you know, I'll say this also about Quinn Ewers and about Tua. Quinn Ewers and Tua do have one thing in common. Well, I guess they had a couple of things in common because both of them worked under Sark too. And Sark runs an RPO-based passing game. They're also kind of first read quarterbacks. They're best on their first read. They're best when they're throwing immediately to their first read, which is usually when you're scheming something open. An RPO-based passing game can do that. That's what the Dolphins do a lot. The reason they were able to solve the conundrum of Tua getting hurt, and Tua kept hitting the ground all the time, and I know he took some martial arts classes and all that kind of stuff. But the key was they got the ball out quickly. Nobody gets the ball out quicker than Tua and the Dolphins. Yeah. They get the ball out very, very quickly. And that's why they use more motion than anybody else in the NFL. Also, something that Sark needs to use more of. They use more motion to get the ball to their fast football players, their speed demons, on the move already. That cheetah motion they use all the time. And Sark uses a lot of targets to motion, too. They should use more of it. So there are some commonalities, especially since Sark, he very much admires it, the Mike Shanahan coaching tree and Mike McDaniel. I told you guys my prediction for the next coaching clinic was going to be Mike McDaniel. I said, no, he's going to bring in Mike McDaniel for the next coaching clinic, man, because he's bringing him in not just to help out the Texas high school coaches and everybody, but I think he's bringing them in selfishly because he wants to pick their brain for about a couple hours. So I think, I'll tell you, Mike McDaniel is going to be the next one. Black Stradamus is right on that one. All right. Okay. Any other thoughts, CJ, on Pro Day before we move on talking about the Texas, the current Texas team, and talking about that the Texas spring football season that's going on right now?
Yeah, one last thing. Football Junkie actually had a comment about Jalen Ford and his 40. I did not see an official number. I was sitting as close as I could to the scouts just to get an idea. The time that I had with my unofficial hand was about the mid four sevens, so 4.75. I'm not entirely sure what everybody else had. I'm not entirely sure if that's exactly where Jalen Ford wanted to be, but he did have a good day otherwise in my eyes. I thought he moved very well. He caught the ball well in drills. It looked like he could cover, change direction, turn and run. He looked good in space, which I think was one of those big question marks when you compare him to what DeMarvion Overshown did the year before. Coming out of Texas, his strength was being able to move in space laterally up and down the field, you know, having that safety background that really worked to his advantage. You saw him go around three. Jalen Ford, I don't think he's going to have those testing numbers that DeMarvion had. But I think, you know, round four is probably a safe expectation for a landing zone right now for Jalen Ford.
That's a guy that I feel like is going to have an NFL career regardless of wherever he's drafted. I think he'll last longer than the average. I think the average right now is 3.5 years. I think he's got it. Sounds a second contract in the NFL. And I think Jalen Ford's an NFL player. And the 4.7, I mean, that's for a linebacker. As long as he showed he's got a decent baseline athletic profile as a linebacker, his film is fantastic. His football IQ and football intelligence are through the roof. That's what's going to keep him on NFL teams. That's what will get him reps in the NFL. I feel good about Jalen Ford. I know he's going to get drafted in the middle rounds. Maybe even he'll drop to some later rounds, depending on what the other linebacker class looks like. But I think he's got it immediately makes a roster and sticks in the NFL for a few years. There's no question in my mind.
Absolutely. Rod, how do you compare him with one of your teammates, Derek Johnson?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Actually, because him and DJ are close. I know that because I've seen them interact and talk on our Third and Longhorns podcast that Derek Johnson does. Shout out to Nick Shuley, my man, Fozzie Whitaker, Jeremy Hills, Alex Okafor, and the crew. But they, first of all, Derek Johnson's a physical freak. He is. He's a physical freak. That's a dude that will put on a show at a combine or a pro day. I haven't looked at his testing numbers, but Derek Johnson put on a show. He really did. Cause he was, like I said, that guy was running like a DB back when he came on campus at Texas. He was a new age linebacker. Yeah. You remember this, coach, back when they first recruited Derek Johnson, their team still running triple option in the Big 12, man. You still had Nebraska. You know, I mean, Texas still had a fullback. We still had like Chad Stevens and Matt Trissel back in the day. We still were running fullback football, man. It was very different. And then Mike Leach came and totally just terrified.
Yeah, he said, no more of that. We're fucking.
Yeah, exactly. And then everybody followed suit. It was like, that looks like a better idea than what the hell we're doing. And everybody became a spread league. And Derek Johnson was perfect for that. And Derek Johnson could run. And he was so intelligent. The intelligence is where I think they are comparable. Derek Johnson was such an intelligent football player, guys. When he first came, you know that little move that his signature move, the tomahawk punch, where he punches he wraps up the football player, the ball carrier, one arm, and then punches the football out with the other. All right, he was doing that when he came on campus as a high school prospect already. We saw him do it in practice. And then Coach Maurice was like, you know what? We should put that in the drills. That's a good move. Let's do that. Do that. Hey, guys, do that. We started, it became like a Derek Johnson drill. He was doing it naturally. He's he was that kind of football player. And he told us, he was like, and we did it later. He said, I thought about it. If I'm good enough, I'm fast enough to be able to track down the ball carry and secure him and athletic enough to secure him with one arm, then why not try to get that ball out with the other arm? But everybody can't do that. All right. Yeah, he can do it. I tried to do it one time and missed the tackle and got yelled at. So I'm like, you know what? I'm done with the Derrick Johnson method. I'm done with that. I'm not a freak like that. So freakishly, athletically, they're not comparable. But I would say football intelligence, Jalen Ford is highly intelligent. He's a football investigator. He really is.
I was wondering about that because they both the thing that reminds me of how he reminds me of DJ is they both seem to be at the right place at the right time. So yep. many, you know, just have that innate ability to read the quarterback or see plays develop and just be at the right place at the right time.
Yep, you're right about that. And I think that's because of that football IQ that they always kind of – they got to jump ahead of everybody else comes to diagnosing plays. All right, good stuff there on a Texas Pro Day. Everybody looks forward to the draft when Texas – they could have as many as eight guys. If they have three first-rounders, it'll be the first time they have three first-round picks since 1980. Just keep that in mind. Mel Kiper right now, I believe, has them with three first-round picks. So we'll see how that goes. All right, I think there's a nice little segue in here by Rick asking about Sadir Mitchell, because this is interesting. Because Sadir Mitchell was there along with a lot of other players too. And he said, could attending a pro day turn out to be the motivation Sadir Mitchell needs to lose 20 pounds and get ready to contribute in 2024? I saw Kenny Baker out there. I saw the picture. Jerry Hamilton actually tweeted out of Kenny Baker out there coaching Sadir Mitchell up. Out there at the Texas Pro Day, giving him some pointers. I don't know what he was saying, but man, I think all Longhorn fans got giddy about that. That is kind of the key for, you know, this team, the beauty of them being able to witness these guys on the same path that they're about to be on that journey. Yeah. I mean, all these young guys are out there. It's inspiring. And this team that this young team that Texas has right now, and this is a good question that you threw out there, CJ. I think it's interesting, and we should discuss it. How many of the guys who are going to be obviously draft eligible, and how many of the guys who are seniors and their eligibility being done with? How many of them are at Texas Pro Day next year? What does that look? There were how many total, CJ? Were there 12 or 13? I guess with Quinn Ewers, he wasn't one of the prospects that was draft eligible, but would he make 13 prospects working out?
He would have been 14. They added 14, okay. Jet Rush and Ryan Sanborn to the list who were not at the combine. So Quinn would have been technically 14, but you can probably anticipate a number very similar next year to what we saw this year when it comes to the number of participants. And again, probably the number of NFL executives and scouts coming in. Again, because it's different when quarterbacks are throwing, right? Especially guys that you expect to be in the top end of the NFL draft. ESPN had their entire crew out in Los Angeles yesterday to see Caleb Williams throw during his pro day. And we all know where he's going to end up, right? Like, you don't need the question of, well, I mean, is Caleb Williams going to be your number one? Is the team going to trade up? No, I mean, it's been written in stone now for a while. He's going to the Chicago Bears with Quinn. And depending on how this upcoming season goes, there's going to be that question of, is he worthy of being that number one guy? Is he a top five caliber guy, top 10? Is he a first rounder? Right now, I think coming off of the day he had yesterday, you can firmly plant him in that first round. But as a result of that, that's going to bring extra eyeballs, extra scouts, extra position coaches that probably wouldn't have made the trip to see guys like Calvin Banks, maybe a DJ Campbell, someone like Isaiah Bond, who – you know, we're looking at right now could certainly fill the void of an Xavier Worthy with that speed. Does Silas Bolden figure into the way into the pro day as well? Andrew McCuba, Trey Moore, you know, there's so many other extra pieces. Jahdae Barron, I'm forgetting him, and Terrence Brooks. So my point is, this was probably the first year that you can expect a really heavy run of pro day attendees, not only for participants on the field, but scout in the stands, sitting there clocking the Texas Longhorns. It's different now with Sarkisian. I mean, we should be rejoicing in that regard.
Yeah. There'll definitely be more players, I think, working out. We don't know how many underclassmen. We know it'll be Kelvin Banks. You know, I mean, the question is how many underclassmen. But based on just the guys whose eligibility is up, and I haven't went through and counted all the guys, I think you know, the guys who are trying to keep hope alive, right? Those guys too, right? The guys who are trying to make their dream happen. They may not be on anybody's big board like a Jet Bush, but they're trying to make the dream happen and keep hope alive. And we've seen those, by the way.
Yeah.
We've seen plenty of guys take that route. It's a tougher route to travel, but we've seen guys be able to do it. And so I think because of that, and also, like I said, you may even get some older guys from different classes who now see 96 NFL scouts, coaches, and execs out there going, you know what, man, if I want to revive my NFL career, I might need to go work out in Texas. Let me go ask Sark if I can work out there. I think you're going to have more next year just based – and then the underclassmen. Who are the – like you said, who are the underclassmen that show out? We're not anticipating might have a shot and didn't anticipate them being draft eligible so soon, but have a breakout year, have a great year and then have to make that decision. That's the first world problem that we all want to have. So I think you'll have more than the 14. I'm going to say you'll probably have closer to 20. I really do. I think you have a ton of guys working out next season.
Coach, yeah. Was there a year that you remember just having just really a remarkable amount of guys at the pro day or even a draft class from Texas that you looked at and was like, all right, this group of guys, whether it be super top heavy or super loaded, you're like, all right, that was a really special year. I'm looking forward to them, duplicating that.
Yeah. Well, obviously the 2006 draft was, pretty special for Texas. And I just remember, I don't remember that as much as I do 2008, 2009. I just remember, just guys that were freaks. Who's a defensive end that we had out of Dallas that was a freak that got hurt going down some stairs or something?
Sergio
Kendall. Oh, freak. My goodness. If freak. You've ever seen that guy in person,
yeah.
I mean, you just go, oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
and
man.
Then you see him run. He was one of the freakiest guys I've ever seen in person.
Yeah, he was.
He really was, and it was just really a tragedy that he wasn't able to, to really develop and fill out his potential in the NFL. Yeah.
He was drafted by the Ravens. By the Ravens in the second round? I want to say he was drafted by the Ravens. That's how you know you're a badass. The Ravens draft you anyway. Yeah. It's a linebacker.
Yeah.
No doubt. Okay. So real quick, here are the guys who are listed as seniors on the roster. I don't know the COVID eligibility stuff. So some of these guys still may have another year. Yeah. Are they done with that officially? Are we done with that, TJ? Yeah. Okay. So here are the guys who are seniors that I think may work out at Pro Day next year. Jade Barron, of course. Gavin Holmes, right? Makuba. Kendrick Blackshear. David Benda. Maurice Blackwell. Bert Auburn, Vernon Broughton, Jake Majors will be there. Alfred Collins, Hayden Connor. I'm just going down the list here. You think Gunnar Helm's going to work out? I think so. Baron Sorrell's going to work out. I mean, just Savea. That alone, where we at? We had 12, 15. 13. We had 15 right there. That's just the seniors. That ain't even counting Quinn. Quinn's going to be there. Kelvin, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, Kelvin Banks, I think you're going to end up at 20-some. It's especially if some underclassmen show out, and then it's a couple of old heads decide, hey man, I'm going back there to work out a little bit too and keep my dream alive. I think you might be close to 20 next year, man. It's gonna be low, it's gonna be a loaded pro day.
That's interesting. I think that's also, a tip of the cap to Sarkisian and his staff for retaining a lot of these guys. It's that's one thing too, to man. Develop these guys, but Texas a lot under Tom Herman towards the back end of that regime, you didn't necessarily see your freshman class stick 4 years at the school. And I think that was a little bit of the changing of the times in college football, where the portal became a little bit louder. You saw guys transferring if the situation wasn't right or the scheme or the fit wasn't right. But for a lot of that, especially that 2018 class that you look at and you're like, all right, the defensive backs are going to be what gets you through, for the most part, that's the biggest takeaway you could have from that class. B.J. Foster transferred out, Jalen Green transferred out. There were guys, Caden Stearns left early. So that group that you thought were going to be 4-year guys, perhaps when you're looking around the room, the fourth year, you're like, all right, we need a brand new group, you know, for the most part. So
yeah.
I think that's a big testament and kind of a tip of the cap of this staff is, hey, if you're not on the field yet, trust the process, trust the development. We'll find a way for you. Be on your own path. That's something that he preaches about Arch all the time is, you know, he's beaten to the path of his own drum, basically. So I think that's a really important part of it.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. We're looking at this roster. One thing I want to ask you, there are a lot of players that we've discussed in this offseason. And I mean, I feel like we talk about some of the same players over and over again. Do you guys have any sleepers? Got any sleepers? Which is basically someone we don't talk about that you think will end up being an impactful player, that'll end up being someone who makes an impact on this team that we have not talked about, and this spring you start to see them ascend a little bit and make a name for themselves?
I've got two, and I think Coach Shipley's going to like both of them. The first is Matthew Golden. I think having watched him Tuesday in that live situation or in that live practice for the first time, he comes off a bit differently at the wide receiver. And I think, you know, Isaiah Bond gets the headlines. You see the production from Silas Bolden. You think, all right, yeah, those are the two guys that we can really count on to just throw into the lineup for Quinn Ewers and see a lot of production. Matthew Golden looks really, really good. And then the other one I'm sticking at wide receiver, DeAndre Moore. And I know that tight wide receiver circle doesn't expand a whole lot under Sarkisian, but this is a kid that sees an opportunity and he's ready to fight for it. Was the first on the field on Monday for the first practice of spring football, was the first again this morning, I was told, to get on the field just to be around the practice, just to get extra catches, extra straps, extra routes, whatever it was. He's there. So I think DeAndre Moore has that brain on him right now that says, there's opportunities for targets right now at the Texas wide receiver spot. I'm going to go claim mine. So,
yeah.
Coach, you got any?
Well, I had Matthew Golden on my list.
Hey!
for sure. You know, and I got Silas, you know, because, you know, there's been so much talk about, you know, the graduating class, you know, we it's just going to be, you know, guys that are new to the program, you could say any of them, you know, breakout because we haven't seen them yet, but Leonga LaFalle is a guy that I'm really interested in watching this spring and seeing how he develops. We don't talk about him a lot. We've talked about him a couple times, Rod, but he's a guy that I'm really excited to see. And really, if the secondary is able to reach the potential that we hope they will, it's because Malik Muhammad is going to come out and really just have a breakthrough spring and be a big-time leader in our secondary. So I'm hoping that, on the back end of it, Malik is a guy that really starts spreading his wings and becoming a leader on this team and obviously a leader on the defense.
I want to answer that too, but before we do, Chris, my man CB, Chris Bennett, had a great question that relates to both of you guys' answer to sleepers. You both chose Matthew Golden, and then CJ, you also went to DeAndre Moore, the wide receiver. He wants to know who are in Sark's rotation of starting wide receivers in 2024. We know Sark usually has a set rotation and sticks with it. I have been on the record. I do think Sark, for the first time at Texas, expands his wide receiver rotation and circle of trust. I think it's five, as many as five. It could be more. I think it will be. I think Matthew Gold is going to crack it. Both of y'all are right.
Going back to the Tom Herman days, Rod? Come on, man.
Cow money, baby. Cow money. Where Cow money at? My man, Cow money. Yeah.
That's my man. Cow money.
I do think there's going to be an opportunity to see as many as six. Will that be the case? I don't think so because, again, like we've seen with Sarkisian, I mean, when you have Ferraris, why are you sitting back thinking, all right, I need to drive my Nissan Juke, you know? And that's not a discredit to any of the guys on the roster, but especially last year, when you look at two first-round wide receivers and a guy that's been in the program for 5 years, you know, what's the need to throw in an inexperienced freshman or a guy who missed his entire last year due to injury? This year is different because it feels like everybody's on the same playing field coming in when it comes to newness to the system or career production. You know, there's a lot of leveling out that leaves it up to chance a little bit more.
Yeah.
Day one, the first guys that I noticed with the first unit, it was Isaiah Bond, it was Jonte Cook, and it was DeAndre Moore in the slot. Matthew Golden in the routes on air part of practice was getting a lot of run at multiple positions. So if he's your fourth guy right now, that's a pretty good one. And that's not to say he won't eventually be in the first group. Again, we were only in practice for about 20, 30 minutes on day one of spring football. Things can change immediately. But that also, Coach, brings me to Ryan Wingo, who, I mean, it's going to be tough to leave him off the field.
Yeah.
At 6'3", you know, with a 10'6", 100 meter, that kid is going to make some plays and he's going to make some noise this spring. The question is, how quickly can he get to the nitty-gritty of Sarkisian systems when it comes to the nuances of lining up, the routes, the depth? He talked about it a little bit with Jonte in the press conference. So, Coach, I wanted to ask you because, I mean, this is obviously almost a philosophy approach when it comes to coaches and their wide receiver position and the rotation that they have. If you feel like you have the bodies there, do you want to rotate often? Do you want to stay fresh? Or do you look at your top, you know, two or three guys as, you know, they're my horses. I'm going to let them run.
Yeah, I always let my guys go. You know, I mean, you got to, as DKR, you say, you know, dance with who brung you, you know. But you have to be selective and know when you need to give your guys a break, you know, and get some of these younger guys in there, especially maybe some of the games that we're going to have early in the season, maybe that aren't going to be barn burners, you know. You know, not Georgia or A&M or, you know, one of those kind of games, some games where you can maybe get some guys in early and see what they look like. And then, unfortunately, you know, you always have to – you've got to get some guys in the game because you never know when injuries are going to occur. Yep. And it would be a shame to be 5-6 games into the season and have one of your big dogs go down and, you know, you haven't developed guys, playing them strategically – in certain situations in a game from time to time, getting them some reps, mm-hmm. seeing what they can do live, you know, on Saturday night. I think that's going to be huge. You've got to play. The chances are you're not going to get through the whole season with your top four receivers. It's just probably not going to happen. You're going to have hamstrings. You're going to have shoulders. You know, you're going to have some stuff. And so you're going to need 5-6 guys that can that can – you know, take it to the house and be go-to guys for you. So you have to strategically find a way to work them in the game. But I just, you know, I don't like some of the years when I was there when we just took guys. I mean, they may have the hot, you took them out and put somebody else in for a few series. I don't understand that. You know, I just think you go with the guys that have the hot hand and then you strategically play those other guys in there, get them some reps when you can, so that the game is not so big when they do have to be called on because of an injury or something.
That's a good point. Yep. Yeah. And I think it does change when it comes to receiver coach by receiver coach or head coach and coordinator. You know, it's one of those philosophy things. But, hey, if you got dudes, let those dudes play. I think, Rod, you'll say the same thing at DB. You don't want to come out. If that's your spot, you want it out of spring, you want it out of fall camp, that's your spot. You want to get on the field, you want to go make plays. But
Speaking of wide receiver, and I agree with you guys about the rotation. So even though it's the safety, it bothers me. It bothers me when there's no – there doesn't seem like there's a method to it or a rhyme or a reason to it situationally. It seems like they're just rotating for the sake of rotating. That I don't like. So I agree with you, Coach, on that. Dance with what brung you, one of my favorite quotes from the late, great DKR. We are about to embark, though, on a – kind of a golden era of wide receivers at the University of Texas football wise, right? We just talked about how deep that group is. I mean, I saw this stat from LHN. It's a great stat. If you look at wide receivers drafted in the first 50 picks in the modern NFL draft, Lamb Jones in 1980 went second overall. My former teammate Roy Williams went seventh overall, twice my teammate with the Detroit Lions too, in 2004 went seventh overall. Cotton Spire in 1971 went 38th overall. That's it.
Not many.
In terms of the top 53. And you may have two go in the first round. You're definitely going to have two in the top 50, but you may have two go in the first round overall. So we're about to embark on a kind of a golden era of just how deep they are at wide receiver. Obviously, Coach Shipley, you know about how deep Texas can be at wide receiver when Jordan, your son, is out there basically building his legacy. I'll throw this out there. I haven't told you this, Coach. I don't know if you've heard me say it. I do believe he's the GOAT of wide receivers at Texas. I'll just throw it out there. I think he's the GOAT. I think he's the all-time greatest. I think he's number one on my list. And I played with Roy Williams. I think Jordan Chip is the GOAT. Because stat-wise, they're very close. But my man Roy Williams never scored a touchdown in the Texas OU game, I don't believe. So can't be the GOAT if you never scored against OU.
You got to take a look at how guys play in big games. You know, guys that can stand up in big games, those are the ones. But, you know, I don't like especially since I have a son in that, I don't like to get into that.
I get it.
Ask who's going to be this and that. How would you rate it? You know, they all really – Jordan was there at the perfect time for him.
He was. Okay?
With Colt, okay, with Quan Cosby, with Greg Davis, it was a perfect time for him to be there and fit in the system with what they were doing, you know. Yep. And that's what I'll always appreciate about it. I think it was a God thing that Jordan and Colt and all those guys wound up there at the same time because they just fit. Everything fits so well. Yes. And for the first time since then, I'm seeing it again. I'm seeing guys that are in a system that just fits, and it just works for them. So I don't know that it's fair to start comparing them. Cotton Spire, I probably watched him play on TV. I don't remember it, but he was the man. I mean, he in that system at that time, he was the guy. And to say that he wouldn't be today, I don't know. But I just think it's really exciting that we finally have a group of big-time NFL potential guys, first-round picks, and that's exciting to me. And success breeds success. We just have to keep it going. You remember in the 2010 season, the drop-off that we had. We had a new quarterback. We had a whole new group. Well, not a whole new group of receivers. But, you know, Quan finished up in the season of 08. That was his senior year. He went on to the Bengals. 2009 was a year that Colt and Jordan were seniors, and we played for the national championship against Alabama in the Rose Bowl. The season after that, somehow we'd got complacent in our recruiting, and we just didn't have the guys after that. That's what I love about what Sark and the staff are doing. They're continuing to fill that room with some of the best players in the country and some of the best players in the history of Texas football. And that just fires me up.
Mac also changed the offense too.
That's true.
He wants to go more
big impact on him. He tried to go to an offense where we could pound the ball, but you had a bunch of guys that were recruited from high schools and coaches.
Exactly.
Years. They were taught, those linemen were taught to retreat every snap, to pass block. They weren't taught to come off the ball with a flat back and blow guys off the line like Georgia and Alabama and all those people, Auburn, were doing back then. And so he tried to change it in 1 year, and it just didn't work. That's what I love about Sark, the continuity of the staff, the level of recruiting. You can never become complacent. That's what I love about Nick Saban too. The guy could have just sat back and go, "Man, we got the best thing going in college football." No, he always had that edge. He always kept going. He always kept going, you know, and bringing in the best guys. And not only that, the best coaches in the country, the best recruiters in the country, and then the best guys that help that maybe aren't on the coaching staff that are in the strength staff that develop those guys. And I love every aspect of our program at this time, the way we're recruiting guys, the way we're coaching them, the schemes that we're in, and maybe more than anything, the way they're being developed.
Yeah, it's good stuff, Coach. And thank you to my man CB out there, my man CB, Chris Bennett, with the
man. Chris Bennett could be on this show.
He's a legend.
Run circles around us.
Hey, he's a legend, man. Everybody knows CB. Everybody in the Longhorn family knows CB. Everybody
I don't know why he had to move off to the West Coast like he did.
Hey, we still love you,
CB.
He's still tied in, though. He's still tied into the family. Time. I don't know why he's getting up early as hell, too, to listen to different shows. He's on a different clock. My man is still committed, but that's what the family's all about. We appreciate you, CB. Okay, CJ, you got a couple of questions here for you real quick. Patrick Smith threw this in a while ago. He wanted to know if we can discuss how Billy Walton looked. He said he's heard good things. Also, does he have a chance at playing time this upcoming season? You actually have some tidbits on this.
Yeah, he was a guy that I wanted to watch a little bit. I was, you know, whenever we divvied up work Tuesday between Bobby and Jerry and I at practice, I was like, hey, give me the D-line. I want to go out and see what these guys got. You know, the guys like Colin Simmons, Trey Moore, the returners of Ethan Burke and Baron Sorrell. They kind of steal the headlines at edge. And then you see Colton Vosick back on the field. So you're like, okay, you know, he looks pretty good at 6'6", 255. You know, he looks like an edge should look. But, hey, Billy Walton, he can move. And I think that's something that is in his bag a little bit more than some of the guys that are in that room right now is that athleticism. And you saw it at South Oak Cliff when he was a back-to-back state champion there. He's very quick to the backfield. His thing is it's going to take a pretty – or at least it has taken a long time for his body to get up to speed. That's a big part of playing in the SEC, especially off the edge. You've got to get that armor that we've talked about at times when it comes to CJ Baxter, even Quinn, when it comes to just adding that extra muscle. And at the edge, when you're playing the trenches, you can't go in there at 230, 240 and expect to have continual success unless you're an absolute freak. And right now, Trey Moore is at 245. He'll get up to 250. He'll play there. Billy Walton, to me, when I see his ball get off, we talk about it, BGO, it's quick. And I'm not sure if he'll be a big part of this rotation this year. Again, there's a lot of bodies in front of him. That's expected to be the strength. But as we talked about earlier, a great strength of this staff is keeping the young guys in the program to develop and mold and let them become the players that these coaching staffs want them to become. And so by the time that they are juniors and they are seniors, they can walk in and immediately say, all right, we're going to be game changers now. And I think Billy Walton's kind of on that trajectory now.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff there, CJ. And also a quick one for you from Football Junkie. He said, CJ, was that Leonga LaFau in the picture you took on Twitter with the guys? How does he look physically? I know that's Coach, actually. That's one of his sleepers,
Leonga LaFau. Hey, Coach, I'm right there with you. I love Leonga LaFau, and I took that photo earlier at the pro day. That's Jaden Blue out in the back right as well. I did not realize that at the beginning of the photo, but Colton Vosick on your left, Leonga LaFau in the gray hoodie. That's Anthony Hill right there. Someone said he looked like a bouncer at a club, and I'll tell you what, he certainly does. When you walk by him, he's one of those guys that you don't ever want to get in a street fight with, because he is 6'3", 240, and he's all every bit of it. And that's DeAndre Moore on the right. Leonga LaFau, to me, I mean, he's one of those guys. And Rod, you got a chance to talk to him a little bit on Third and Longhorn. Yeah. I mean, he is as cool, calm, and collected as you will come across. And
yeah, he is.
Coming from, you know, Hawaii, you kind of understand why that's the case. You wash around barefoot. You see him with the flip-flops right there. But, man, he looked impressive. And he's dropped about 8 pounds since last year. He's around 228, 230 last year. I think he's right at 220 at the moment. So he looks like he can play the part. If you want to get back up to 225, I think that would be the perfect height and weight for a guy to play the middle of your defense right there at linebacker. And, Coach, I know you're a fan of him. He's looking good in practice, moving well.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait. I think he's going to be a guy that when he's finished, everybody's going to know how to pronounce his name.
That's a great point. Yeah, you're right. Longhorn fans, they will learn it. They will learn it. If you're good enough, they will learn it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Okay, I like this question, too. I know we're getting close to ending this thing, so if you got a couple of questions, throw them out there. We'll try to answer them before we get out of here, because I want to get at least my man CJ's thoughts about the game tonight, Texas-Colorado State. Jeff, this was early on. Jeff said, sorry if it's been covered. He said, but what happens if the designated player with the radio headset on the field goes out? How fast can a radio be installed in another helmet? How would that work? I'm glad you asked that, because Sark was asked about who's going to wear the headset on defense, and he said, I don't know. He said it could be a star, could be, you know, the middle linebacker. He doesn't really know who it's going to be just yet. Could end up being a safety. I want to know if the rules state specifically, or if the rules stipulate that how many devices I can have available. I can only have one on the field. But this is my idea would be, okay, I want, if I'm a defensive coordinator, I want Jade Barron, I want Makuba, I want Anthony Hill. I want all of them to have the option. So basically, I want all three of those players to have two helmets on the sideline. One with a radio headset, one without. And then I, as a defensive coordinator, can go, all right, on this package, hey, tell Jade coming up, he needs to get his headset on. He's going to be the one with the headset on this package. And I know it's a lot to keep up with, a lot of moving parts, but I feel like that's the best way to handle it, period. And then, so I don't know, Jeff, about the actual rules. I got to go look that up, because the rule – technically has not actually been approved yet. It will be. They assume it will be, and that's why they're experimenting with it now. But I almost feel like they need to have multiple ones available for different players for the situation scenario that Jeff brings up. But also, I would like as a defensive coordinator to have different options for, you know, being able to match up personnel if Anthony Hill's got to leave the field or if Jade Barron's got to be off the field or I got to move him to corner. I would like the option to have someone else with that headset.
Yeah, it's a good point because, again, Texas likes to rotate a lot. If those guys are off the field, who's going to be your big communicator? Yeah. Also, you know, when Texas is up by 40, you know, and your starters aren't in, who's going to be that guy? You know, that's are there going to be multiple guys? Are they going to be sharing around one helmet to make sure that, you know, the size fits all regardless of whose head is in it? I don't think that's going to be the case. So that's interesting. April 18th is the date that we'll get that finalized by the NCAA Rules Committee. So, again, Rod, to your point, I mean, there's still a little bit of nuance that they could figure out. I actually had a Power 5 head coach come out and say to me that they should have just made it so that three guys on the field could have it, you know, and I think that would help alleviate, you know, the miscommunication at times. You could have a guy in the secondary, a linebacker and a defensive line on the offensive side. You could have an offensive lineman, a quarterback, and maybe a receiver, a running back. That way, you know, you bridge all three levels and there's no, you know, confusion for that matter. So we'll see if this rule takes any tweaks moving forward, but a good start nonetheless.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. Yeah, the different, I don't know, situations that could arise. But that's why Sark says they're going to keep the hand signals. They're going to keep hand signals. They're going to keep the, the signal cards or the play cards they have too, just as a contingency plan. They'll keep that there as well. All right, let me ask you this before we get out of here because we're getting close to wrapping this thing up because Texas basketball, Texas men will be facing Colorado State. All right, so I'll ask you this. I'll ask CJ this. And Coach, you could weigh in too, but I know you said you're not watching any tournament stuff. Does Texas have a better chance of having three players drafted in the first round or at Texas men's basketball advancing past the second round of the tournament? Which one is more likely, CJ?
Past the second round? So beating Tennessee? Oh,
but his first round, see, they better – I mean, you don't think he's going to win the first game against Colorado State? It's a, what do you think? It's a push?
No, I think they'll win tonight.
Yeah.
I also think they'll have three guys drafted. I think Xavier Worthy finds a way into that first round. Tonight's kind of a – I don't want to say it's a coin flip, but it's about 60-40 in my eyes. I think Texas does squeak out a win. The key is keeping Dylan Dessue out of foul trouble. He's your nucleus on the offensive side of the ball. Everything goes through him. If you get him off the floor and have to ask Max Asemus to do everything, the wheels start falling apart. Max Asemus, again, can catch fire at any point. He's a microwave. He's a top 10 all-time scorer for a reason. But if you can keep both of them on the floor together – that allows a guy like IT Horton or even, you know, Caden Shedrick even or Tyrese Hunter to sit in those corners, to sit there and just say, all right, if the ball comes to me, I'll be open, because everybody has to hone in on Max Asemus or Dylan Dessue. So keep him out of foul trouble, keep him on the floor. And I think Texas rolls. Just don't let it get into a rock fight like we saw Colorado State and Virginia. That's not the type of brand that Texas wants to play. They want to get up the pace, up the floor and shoot some threes. So let's see him fly. Let's see him make some.
And Texas should be fresh because they should have fresher legs. I did see that Colorado State, this will be their fifth game in the last 7 days. And their bench, they don't have really a deep bench either, 210th in bench scoring. So fatigue should play a factor. Texas and their athletic bigs running the floor, especially inside where Colorado State doesn't have the advantage either. You expect Texas to have to maximize those advantages. So I think Texas should win. But Ken Pom, just throwing it out there, has it as basically 50-50. He's got it as a push. Either team could take it. So there you go. Texas basketball discussion. Oh, Cisco, real quick. Cisco Diaz wants to know how Sorrell is looking. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. I didn't give my sleepers. My sleepers actually were Ethan Burke and Baron Sorrell. Because nobody's talking about Ethan Burke and Baron Sorrell because we're talking about Trey Moore coming in, talking about young Colin Simmons, and those guys deserve a lot of praise. But Ethan Burke was great last year. I think he was the team lead in sacks last season, even with missing some time. Ethan Burke's got a great frame, and I think he's got some natural pass rushing ability. Baron Sorrell has just been building each year. It kind of reminds me of the Christian Jones trajectory and developmental path, where every year he gets a little bit better, just every year a little bit better, transforms his body just a little bit more. So those are the two guys we're sleeping on, I think, because we don't talk enough about Ethan Burke or Baron Sorrell. Those are the two defensive ends you got coming back. We talk more about the guys they're adding to the mix without the assumption those guys are going to take a huge leap. So there you go. Thank you, Cisco, for the question. All right, any closing comments, Coach, you got for the people out there about Texas football, about
anyway? Yeah, well, we're talking about basketball. I'm here for this right here. This is what I'm here for right here.
I know it.
I don't want to act like I care about that other stuff. I'm just here for the football.
Hey, I feel like you too. I'm the same way, Coach. I try to show some love to the other sports. And
no, it's all good. Hey, Texas playing, I want to win. I want to win. But I don't know much about it. I'll turn it over to you guys, let you guys take it.
Now, it is called On Texas Football for a reason. You're right, Coach. Stay on task, guys. Stay on task, all right? Keep the main thing around here. We know
that. But best football season 12 months out of the year, baby. We're Austin, Texas.
You're damn right. We can't waste them. You're right about that.
That's right.
CJ, you got any closing comments for the people out there?
No, should have some big visitors. Brandon Brown coming to campus for the first time with his family. That'll be Friday afternoon, so we'll have updates throughout the weekend. A couple other visitors, expect some offers potentially to be extended as well. So we'll keep you posted on Texas football.
All right. Thank you, guys. Thanks to CJ. Thanks to Coach. You guys did a great job, as always. Thanks to all the folks out there. Coach, you got something to say? Go ahead.
Yeah. I just want to throw out one thing. Just condolences to the McCoy family. Tomorrow, we're going to lay to rest Daddy Burrell McCoy, Colts and Case's grandfather, who was an incredible man. He was 91 years old, passed away in Merkel, Texas. He was a coach. He was the first of the McCoys that was a coach. He was a head track coach at Abilene Christian. He was a head girls basketball coach. He coached Colt's mother. So Colt's mother was a great basketball player.
Wow.
Transferred, I believe, from Louisiana Tech. She's from Dunwoody, Georgia. Transferred, I think, Louisiana Tech, and then to ACU. Burrell McCoy coached her, and then Burrell said, "Hey, Brad, got somebody on the team. I think you might want to ask out." And so, thank goodness, he recruited her and he talked Brad into, or talked, maybe talked her into going out with Brad. I'm not sure how that worked. But anyway, he was a great coach and a great man, a great Christian man. And we're laying him to rest tomorrow at Merkel. So condolences to the McCoy family, because he was a patriarch of an incredible family.
Yeah, thoughts and prayers with Absolutely. Him. Thank you, Coach, for that message.
Great stuff, Coach.
Yeah, that's really good stuff there. And that's fantastic stuff. All right. Well, we appreciate that, Coach. We appreciate all the knowledge you always give us, all the wisdom. Appreciate you, CJ, and all your hard work. Matthew behind the scenes. Shout out to Matthew. This thing could not happen without him. He's the real MVP. And shout out to you folks, all your participation. Love all the questions. We consider On Texas Football to be a family, La Familia. So we appreciate you being part of the community. And until next time, we'll be back Mondays and Thursdays around 4:15 to 5:30. That's when we'll have the winning drive, aka the championship drive, baby. All right. Hopefully, that's right. The championship winning drive.
There we go.
Until next time, for my man Matthew, for my man CJ, for Coach, and for On Texas Football, hook 'em.